the Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
They were playing an interesting game where it was just like a game of keepies off, really, especially in the second quarter. I think they took 42 marks and kicked one goal. So they might be able to get away with it against us. I don't think the method itself is going to lend itself to kicking a lot of goals.
Ah, well, that's his comment. we'll focus on what we can do, and maybe they could too.
Some interesting feedback from the opposition coaches there in the Hawthorn and St Kilda clash yesterday. Alistair Clarkson pouring a bit of cold water on the hype around the Saints. And Brett Ratton, his former assistant, premiership assistant many times, has said, in your boot, Clarko, we'll worry about ourselves. Jimmy Bartel always focused on what was in front of him with the Cats, and he joins us again on a Monday morning. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Half. Morning, man. And look, he touched on it before, the round 15 and round 16. It felt like me, Hawthorn, played twice this round. it's just the way it's been merged into each other. They lost to the Crows. They were very kind to the Crows. He did Matthew Nix a favour to get him his first win on the board in round 15, and then to get beaten by the Saints. And at the moment this year, I think we'd all agree, Clarko's probably the best opening batsman in the world. he can deflect everything down the fine leg, and he's really? Just done so that again brilliantly.
Jeff Boycott areas from our man, Clarko.
Isn't he? He's Ian Redpath. Block, block, deflect, block, block, deflect. I'll get the 50, keep my spot in the side. But I think he's done it that many times this year that I think now people are just going, well, it's just Clarko going again. Because you think in that Adelaide game in round 15A, he went on about the draft.
Yep.
And then they got beaten, and now he's gone on about, well, St Kilda, that's not sustainable. The Saints did kick 80 points in a shortened game. You know, as everyone does, you had the 25% factor. It's a 100-point game. Not many sides kick 100 points these days. So
no.
I think their game plan is sustainable, and it's got them to where they are on the ladder. The important thing for the Saints, what I took it out, is you've got to double down on that game plan now. Don't try and mix and match and play slow. We saw when they got beaten against Melbourne, when they got held up and played slow, they're not the same side.
So they would have been much happier, the Saints, had the Bulldogs lost last night. Now they didn't, so that keeps them into the hunt. But it was a super important win. They've got, who have they got coming home? They've got West Coast and the Giants, I think, the Saints, coming home. So that's an interesting challenge for them. They're really going to have to earn their spot in the finals, which you should when you're a team that's emerging. So they're going to have to earn it. But you're talking about their style, their system and style, which is sustainable, you think. And is it finals sustainable, Jim, from your experience?
Well, whether it is or it isn't, you know, they can't slow down now. So that's the point I'm making. Yep. So, like, they're a couple of games out from finals. You're better off doubling down now and probably overemphasising it to be a point of difference. Now, everyone's a copycat sort of industry. You know, the way they play footy. You know, before West Coast won a premiership, people would have gone, well, the way they played, it's got, you know, chinks in the armour. The way Richmond played, it's got chinks in the armour. You can't surely just handball forward and rush onto it. But what both those sides did was they completely committed to it. You clearly knew when you went to, you know, Richmond and West Coast what they were trying to achieve. Now, I think it's important for the Saints. That's all I'm saying is don't try and slow down and possess the footy to protect yourself.
So it's 14 points in the end, I think it was, for St Kilda, Rammer, in their clash with the Hawks yesterday, 11-14 to 9-12. So both teams inaccurate. And at one stage, they were 6-12. The Saints. They've really kicked themselves into a position where they might cough it up should things go awry, but they're able to straighten up late and control the game and get some of those over-the-back goals. Rammer.
I like what St Kilda did yesterday. Obviously, they had players out that from their that would be in their starting 18, so they had to just find a way. Had to find a way to win, and they were able to do that. They, as Jim said, they slowed the game down to an absolute crawl at times, but it showed another way. It showed they can actually do that now, and albeit, okay, Hawthorn aren't going that well this year, but they're still obviously a very well-coached team, and Clarko couldn't get around that. So I don't have any issue at all. They had to find a way. They kept themselves in the eight by a game. So all credit to St Kilda and Brett Ratton for mine.
I was really disappointed in Alistair Clarkson's comments. I think he's better than that. I think that he showed no respect for the way that St Kilda played. In the first quarter, it was 4-4 to 5-1. So Hawthorn kicked 5 goals in the first quarter. And what St Kilda was able to do was take away Hawthorn's momentum with the way it played. Now, to me, that is a sign of St Kilda getting better and maturing as a football team, that they can go more than just one way. And what they then did after that is that they rebalanced and they've kicked 6 goals, 6 after half time, to Hawthorn's 4-7 or whatever it was. So while the second quarter was hard to watch, they did it for a reason. And while as a sort of a neutral sort of entertainment point of view sitting on the couch, it was frustrating to see that second quarter play out the way it did. But they didn't then get lost in that. After half time, they were again able to change again enough to be able to find a way to win that game. So I think St Kilda should be given all credit for that. And considering the way that Alistair Clarkson's coached his teams, when a lot of it is around keepings off, I just thought that was a disrespectful comment.
Yeah, the thing I noticed a bit differently from what they did against the Demons, now you call it where the ground was or the conditions, yep, whatever it may be, is they didn't get bogged, though, in their back 50.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
They still possess the footy, and this is what I'm saying. They're still going to move the game forward. I talk about this a lot with some sides.
Yep.
They're one in particular that they've got to, even if you are playing this kick-catch game, you still have to move the ball down, because yeah, I feel when the Saints get bogged down, then they're a completely different side. That's what I'm saying. They've almost got it in their mind, overemphasise moving the game forward. Now, you can do that slowly, but you can also do it with really quickly, which they can be really good at as well.
And just to explain that a little bit further, what Jim's talking about there, teams, when they slow the game down, they kick the ball backwards and backwards and backwards. They end up back in their back pocket. Then they have to kick the ball down the line, and it only just gets outside their defensive 50. So usually it's then a restart in an attacking position for the opposition straight away. But if you're able to move the game forward and get a stoppage then down the line in your forward half of the ground, that's moving the game forward.
And I will say as well, to sort of saying before about, I think St Kilda can take a lot out of that. They still have a lot of improving required to do what they need to do to make the finals. I mean, they're a little vulnerable there in that last quarter. I mean, Hawthorn missed a lot of opportunities. Yeah, I am.
Emotional.
Not as emotional as my kids yesterday. But, you know, there was a situation where Hawthorn missed a lot of opportunities that they should have taken to get a lot closer. But St Kilda still found a way, and I think that has to be celebrated.
So a question to everybody here. Did anybody have St Kilda in their final eight to start the season?
No, probably not. I can't remember.
Whatever they do now, Jim, I think they've made some giant leaps in this season in improvement.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the good thing for them is they've gone and got both. I couldn't decide whether in the eight or not, just because there's so many players they brought in. And normally see when you bring in that amount of players to that many key areas of the ground, that it normally takes you a year for everyone sort of to fall and settle into their role. We're still seeing a little bit from Brad Hill, but Dougal Howard, you know, this year has just settled in where you haven't really noticed him, which is great because that's what you want from your key back. He doesn't look out of sorts. Zach Jones has been good. Obviously, Paddy Wright has had some really good games now, that combination. But the other factor, too, is they've got improvement from within, like Jack Steele, Rowan Marshall, you know, Wilkie, Ben Long. I don't think we've all realised how tough Ben Long is across half-back. Caulfield's gotten better. So they've had both. They've been really good, you know, in your trade free agency, bringing all the players that they targeted. Butler, of course, didn't mean to leave him out. But the improvement from within has been really good as well.
They were good. They were good. The Saints, and they did enough, but I thought they were actually okay, considering what was on the line and what was out there and the way that Hawthorn played. Hawthorn were actually much better in the first, particularly early, Jim, with our 3-0 I think they were at one stage. So they got out to a really big start, which as always makes you a bit nervous when you're the team that's expected to win. For the Saints, I reckon they showed a pretty good maturity yesterday.
Yeah, and can I ask you a question, Daniel? You're the coach amongst us. If an opposition side takes 101 uncontested marks, that's sort of a pattern throughout a game. Wouldn't you sort of just put the thing on the phone and go, you know what they're trying to do? They're going to try and possess the footy. We can be a little bit more aggressive in our defence.
Yeah.
Well, like, surely you can see that pattern unfolding in a game.
Well, there's a couple of teams that applied to yesterday. The poor old Bombers copped the wrath of the Cats doing that as well with the uncontested marks, which we'll talk about. But absolutely right, Jim, absolutely right. They're trying to close down, open up space and own the footy. Close it down! Push up!
That's all. Add the 25% factor on that. If you imagine a full-length game, look, we're on track for, 10,000 marks in a game.
Yeah. That's a lot of marks, Jim. That is a lot of marks. Yeah, Saints are a game inside the eight with two to go, so they've given themselves every chance.
So if they'd lost that game, I don't think they could have made it. They've got two left. They've got West Coast and the Giants. They're on 36 points. And with the Bulldogs beating the Eagles, that was one the Saints really didn't want to happen because the Bulldogs have got Hawthorn and Fremantle in their last two and they're one game behind. The Giants are also on 32 points with Melbourne and St Kilda to come. Collingwood on 34 points with Gold Coast and Port Adelaide to come. And then Melbourne, they're the ones that of that grouping trying to make the eight. They've still got the three games to go with Fremantle tonight and then GWS and Essendon. So really, it's a complete raffle who gets those final two spots.
Yeah, and just remember the Giants are like Melbourne. They've got the extra game because remember the Giants had the bye because of that whole Western Australia parking over there for a week. So they got the crowbars coming up. So
yeah, so they're going. Just, you'd think that the Giants are going to make it.
Maybe. Adelaide are in form. Maybe. We know that. Adelaide are in form. We know that. They're a hot team at the moment.
They're on their biggest winning streak for the year, Adelaide.
They are, Jim. It's very important to remember that stuff. I'll tell you who's not, Jim. The Bombers are not on the biggest winning streak for the year. They got absolutely mauled by your Cats yesterday. It was one of the most powerful performances I've seen from a team all year. We've talked about the Cats' ability to really put the foot on the throat this season. They can control a game and just ease back when they want to, but when they want to go and really do some damage, they can do it. And with 6-1 in the first quarter and then 12-2 at halftime, it was curtains for the poor old Bombers. How'd they do it, Jim?
Everywhere. Pick an area where they didn't do it. On-field, match committee, you name it, match-ups. I just want to know what the excuses are this week, Rama, for the Bombers.
Michael Hurley. Zero.
Michael Hurley on Tom Hawkins. That's an interesting matchup. Yeah, you got Cale Hooker, who's probably a bigger-bodied player. At least it gives you a chance down there. But I've been saying, I've been telling you, the Cats are the real deal. They've got depth everywhere. They've started to work out. I guess their biggest weaknesses are not as glaring as they were in previous years running the finals. Their younger group is at 50 games, and they've got finals experience. And they've got players who are in career best form. Menegola, Guthrie, these sort of guys as well. So they're a red-hot side with confidence who, from the outset, have embraced hub life and just seem to almost be excited by it.
I was hoping the bye might have got the Cats half and Jim and Whitey. clearly it had the reverse effect on Essendon have a way of running teams that are and players that are not going well. Now Geelong haven't gone well off a bye for how many years, Jim?
15.
We take 2 weeks for the bye.
Right. So Essendon, as expected, they break that curse for Geelong with the way they started. Look, the standout for me is when your season's on the line and that's what you serve up, that's really disappointing for a football club. And Essendon's season was on the line. There was still a chance to play finals football. 12-2 at halftime, and it's all over. They didn't look like it. They absolutely didn't look like it. Geelong were left to do whatever they liked. Essendon at times really just they looked like witches' hats. The way Geelong were able to move the ball, the way they went into, Essendon have been this fold back team this year, but the amount of times that Geelong went into an open forward line was simply amazing. So the Bombers weren't up for the fight, and they copped their right whack yesterday.
Yeah, and sorry, Whitey, just before you go, you're just using the stats is You normally try and find something if you lose, like, oh, what do we win an area? You go through them. The only area that Essendon won was they kicked more points than Geelong.
Hang so on, they won the inaccuracy. Tackles inside forward 50. They had 11. They had 11 to 7 tackles inside forward 50. They were dominant there.
No, yeah, they might have tackled
themselves
well.
On a couple of them.
Essendon had one more. They won one more stat.
Which one?
What's that?
They had more interchanges than Geelong.
Oh, my apologies, Rammer. I have to reverse that back. They wanted everyone to have an experience of getting belted.
Nice work, Rammer.
So Rammer, let's dig down a little bit deeper on this with Essendon.
Into the Cats.
Because they are prone to do this. Last year against the Western Bulldogs late in the season, they gave up about 28 goals in a row. Where they were uncompetitive. Now they've put in that sort of similar sort of performance yesterday, as you said, with the season on the line, because it looked like they'd checked out. Their season, they just checked out on their season. However, their season was still alive. So what does that say to that playing group that sort of performance is still happening or has the potential to still happen?
Well, probably says to me that they lack resilience as a squad. They lack a little bit of fight and probably lack a little bit of passion with the way they perform. So I think we can go as deep as we want into this, Whitey. But the reality is they're just not good enough at the moment.
That's a really important comment. Yeah, right?
And you look at. You could go all the way back to 2012. They've been around this part of the ladder for that long, and we're talking 8 years now. They've been sort of 7th to 12th, and they're
worst
and
place to
they're,
get stuck.
What? That's right. And what's happened too, Whitey, is their percentage is a real indicator.
Absolutely,
percentage is a real indicator for the team. And if you look at Essendon's percentage right now, it's 82.9, and they're sitting in 11th spot. So when they win, it's a close win. When they lose, they get slaughtered. And yesterday was simply that. So it's difficult when you watch the Bombers at the moment because you simply don't know what's going to turn up with regard to effort. And it's hard to say. I'd never, ever question any AFL footballer's effort out on a field or want to play. But I don't know, as an Essendon supporter, what they're going to turn up with. And it's a hard one.
But this is my point, Rammer, is that they know that internally and they haven't been able to fix it. They want to be known as a team that can be trusted and they can't fix it. Now, Ben Rutten has essentially had the keys to the car this year. Blake Carousel, obviously new to the team, new to the club this year. But they haven't been able to fix what is a significant deeper problem than just game style, because we know that they've had injuries, that's been well documented, but that doesn't excuse a lack of effort, which was the case yesterday.
No, but there's a system issue too, and Joe Watson picked this up beautifully yesterday in the coverage, Jim. I'm not sure if you're watching or not, but he was talking about, it was half-time or leading into half-time, 12 goals to 2 down, and he's talking about them folding back into defence to try and save the game and try and attack from your defensive half. Doesn't work. It's been proven not to work, especially for the Bombers in the last 8 years, Rammer. So it's a system issue as well. Whether or not they're trapped between two worlds at the moment, the old and the new, I don't know. But it's more than just effort. It's system as well. They're all over the shop.
You just touched on system. Whitey, you said they've identified the problem, but they can't fix it, which in my sort of the way I sort of take that, that's a bit of personnel. So, Rammer, you're the last one left here, and you're the Bombers man. Is it system or is it personnel? So do they need to do, I'll use example, do they need to just completely commit to a system over the next summer and come out and just go, that's Essendon? Or do they need to do like a bit like Port Adelaide where make some really tough calls and let's just start committing to the draft?
No, I don't think they need to commit to the draft. I actually think the players are the majority of players there. I think there's a couple of personnel changes that they need. There's a lot of what I see comes down to just lacking in a couple of key areas. They've lacked that key midfielder now for a period of time. And that'll come. I think that they've been trying to find that, and that'll come. But the system part's interesting. I've always thought Essendon's best system is attack, is running attack and use with flair, because that's the type of player that they have. They have that type of player, but Half just said it, this fullback system that they're working on at the moment, they're getting themselves trapped. They're getting themselves too deep in the ground. They're trapped, and then when they try to attack, they're too deep. They're too deep in the field to start to move the ball, Jim. So I just think, I haven't really answered the question, to be honest with you, because I think it's probably...
No.
I actually think it's a bit of both.
No,
I
felt like you answered, we've got the players, we just need to work on our system. What, you got a different point of view? Do you think
I'm a bit like Rammer. I think there's multiple problems. I firmly believe that Essendon don't play the right way, but they got criticised by being too offensive a couple of years ago. So I think they've overcorrected in a lot of ways. Well, and that's the biggest concern of all, is that this is the new plan that, as Dylan Shield tells us, well, it's going to take some time to bed down. My biggest issue with Essendon, Jimmy, is the lack of leadership out on the field. When things are going wrong, not enough Essendon players stand up and say, you know what, we're not going to accept this. We're actually going to stand up collectively, but as a leadership group, to make sure this game doesn't get away from us. And in my view now, Rama played in a premiership team. Jimmy, you played in many premiership teams. And the reality is good teams have a core group of leaders that stand up and are consistent performers week in, week out. And Essendon, really, outside a couple, don't. And Zach Merritt's been Essendon's best player this year, and he's not in their leadership group this year. So, to me, it's a leadership issue, and it's an on-field leadership issue more than an off-field leadership issue.
Can't believe you didn't reference my 99 Antec Cup victory then. That was disappointing. That was very,
was that
very
in the special jumpers? That real weird hawk check jumper? Was that in
no,
the
no, that was no, 96. No, no, that was 96.
It.
No,
it was still a weird jumper.
That was a lightning premiership.
Had a hawk on it with a big eye.
Yeah, it was an unusual system they were running that year, but a successful system.
Is there anything I said then, Rama? Is there anything there, Rama, that I said that's unacceptable?
I agree with that. There's one thing I just want to make mention. If you look at the performance of Essendon with their season on the line and the Bulldogs with their season on their line, you can't even compare those two performances last night. It's impossible. Like, the Bulldogs were desperate, and we'll talk about them, I'm sure, after the break. Desperate, hungry, want, but Essendon, nah. They're just... they looked beaten before they even walked out yesterday.
Well, they were late
to the Bulldogs,
game.
Yeah, but the Bulldogs... The Bulldogs in that game, Rama, they didn't play as well as they could have. They did a lot wrong. But in the clinches, their good players stood up for them. Now, Marcus Fondapelli's been questioned as a leader, and I still can't get my head around that. He was inspirational there last night for the Dogs, and it wasn't just the goal he kicked. It was other things he did as well. Lockie Hunter, Jackson McRae, there had a number of players that stood up for them in the clinches and just willed them over the line in the end when it looked like they weren't going to win.
Yeah, a different scenario. I mean, Essendon were never in that. Geelong absolutely brained them. So no, whilst it's, you know, in the clinches, when you talk about when you need players to stand up, there was no clinch in the game yesterday with Geelong, and Essendon.
Yeah, but Half, I'm not talking about Essendon just yesterday. I'm talking about Essendon in general. That's where their issues are. So, look, you know, they were obliterated in the first quarter, Essendon. They were never coming back from there. But some of it's actually in the standards that are set to make sure that that sort of situation, when your season on the line, doesn't actually take place in the first place.
The Cats are firing, is what we know, Jim. And you've been on them for a while now. I'm still thinking that the Tigers are premiership favourites. We'll come back and talk about the Tigers after the break one of the situations.
Cats are comfortably favourites.
Well, we'll Jimmy, talk about in that. A word, that's good conversation. Yeah, we'll do that.
In a word, Jimmy, off the text message, Josh Jenkins got his first chance yesterday. Does he stay in the team or is it still Reece Stanley?
Unsure.
Okay.
You said a word. I got to see more of it. That's more than one word now.
we'll just piggyback on those words after the break, Jim. Stand by, Jimmy, with us reviewing round the end of round 15 and part of 16A, and all the issues in footy after this on the Breakfast Club.
The game's so hard, you know, so hard to play, and I'm sure everyone that supports us and looks at us, and you know, our members and fans, they enjoy when we have victory, and you know, it's important that the players enjoy victory. And I thought it's actually Goldie Tyson Kolsak's little play to bring a bit more excitement to the aftermatch and the song, and good on him. And you know, you've got to create, you've got to connect, and when you can't, you need to celebrate. And I reckon as a footy club, we've been really strong in making sure we celebrate the right moments. I thought that was a moment tonight that we should celebrate. But let's hope we get to use it a lot, you know, through the next 6 weeks or whatever it is, and you know, we look forward to being able to do it more often.
That is the voice of Ken Hinckley, the coach of the Port Adelaide Football Club. Did you know that they are on top of the ladder and have been since round one? They are on fire. They had a 36-point victory over the Kangaroos, Rama, and he was talking there about the in-room drum that Tyson Goldsack had got involved with and decided that they needed as part of their celebration and singing of the Port Adelaide theme song.
And I loved it. Yeah, and I hope I hope they aren't getting criticised for that. There'll about getting ahead of themselves. Because, you know, they can't put their arms around each other anymore, because trying to do the right thing as much as they can. Hamish Hartlett gets the drums. You're allowed to celebrate for 10 seconds after a game, surely, Jim, when you have a win, and have a little bit of fun. And you know, you see the reaction of Hamish's teammates to when he's doing it's fantastic. That's what teams are built around, camaraderie. You can have the most perfect game plan in the world, but if you don't want to play for each other and enjoy each other's company, and if you can't enjoy each other's company for half an hour after a game, we've got real issues. I absolutely love that from Hamish Hartlett and Tyson Goldsay. It's a great idea.
Yeah, correct, Rammer. And look, the people who complain, they're the type of people who complain. If you give them free bars of gold, they'll complain it's too heavy. Well, that's the type of people. So you don't worry too much about that sort of complaining, because that's complaining for... but you have a look at the game. Look, they were completely professional. We talked about Geelong smashing Essendon in every aspect of the game. Port Adelaide did that. Like, they even did lose the interchange, Rammer, so that was one area they need to improve on. But every other part of the game, they dominated. They were a professional side, a top-of-the-table side, beating second last on the ladder. And we expected that from Port. I'm trying to look for some positives. I think the positives for the Kangaroos is, I think McKay or Mackay. Is he a Mackay or a McKay?
He's a Mackay.
Mackay.
Because his brother goes by McKay.
That's right. So he goes by Mackay.
His identical twin goes by McKay. He goes by Mackay. No, but I think he's been a bit of a find for him. Look, he's been on their list for a few years, and everyone's focused, obviously, on his brother at Carlton. But I think they've found him as a key back, which they can keep working on. You get another summer into him. He's held his own, I think, down there. He probably needs just next step for him is to probably affect the game now, like as far as intercept and get involved on the way out. But his defensive work on some pretty good forwards in the last 6 weeks, he's only coughed up maybe one goal a game, which is really good for a young key back. I think that's a bonus for them, for the Kangaroos. Anderson's now starting to string a little bit of footy together. And Davies Uniacke, the high draft pick, he's starting to get his hand on the footy. So I think he's going from that new player where you have 10 and 12 touches to being more consistent with our game. So, look, I tried to find positives for the Kangaroos in what's been a pretty tough old year for them.
Yeah, no, David Uniacke was really good, Jim, and so was Jed Anderson. Yeah. I think he's really evolved. I mean, Luke McDonald does a great job for them too, week in, week out.
He probably wins their best and fairest. I think McDonald wins their best and fairest this year. He's had big tagging jobs, but when he hasn't tagged, he's found enough of the footy.
And they lost Simkin midway through the game through a clash where my man Zach Butters...
What do we think about that one? He got 2 weeks
The adjudication from Chriso was careless, high and high. I thought the high was a bit extreme. I'd like to challenge that if I was Port and just get that to a medium impact. I know he went off and he didn't come back on, but I'm not sure. I reckon I could fight that and get it to medium, but it is a 2-week sanction at this stage until such time as the power decide to challenge that, Jim.
It seems like he erred on the side of you can challenge it. Like,
yeah.
When he, I'm just guessing when he sort of puts them in these sort of categories, I reckon the argument would have been, oh, do I go high, medium? I'm leaning towards high. If I do that, at least then Port Adelaide can challenge it. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
I was comfortable enough with that one, considering if you think of Dylan Scheel, 2 weeks for what he did. Oh, I think that was fair. One thing that did happen is that despite him getting offered a 2-game suspension, I reckon the Zach Butters has only enhanced his reputation with the way he played. And there was that incident on the far side with Jack Zeeble where Jack Zeeble almost ate him. And he had a big smile on his face. Like, laughing. I love that contact. Yeah. Bring it on. And then he did a couple of other moments after that where there were really strong moments. We know him as being this really creative, exciting player, but he's got this hardness about him as well, which is really impressive.
Oh, no, he's the best of
the lot. He's a young star. Absolute young star of the competition because he can play that half forward role. I think we'll eventually see him go up into the midfield, play as that hybrid sort of type midfielder. He uses the ball well, he runs well, he cares, he's got passion for his team and his teammates. I think I'm with half. I think he's of those three right now, he's the leader of the pack.
Yeah, and Matthew Lloyd made an interesting comment yesterday. He has Toby Green tendencies and traits. He's not the class of the real polish, I don't think, of Toby Green or the match-winning capabilities just yet, but he's got that edge. He's got the ability to fight and love the contest and influence games. Not the Toby standard, but he's got traits, and I reckon that's a pretty good analysis from Lloydie.
You touched on this half before about the fact that they started the season on top of the ladder after that big win in round one against Gold Coast, and they're still on top of the ladder. When you throw in the fact that it's their 150th year anniversary and they had massive things planned as a club and they haven't been able to do that because of obvious reasons, for them to be able to do what they've done, they'll finish on top of the ladder. It is an extraordinary achievement from this team. That we were talking about ladder predictions earlier in this segment about where we had teams and all that sort of thing. I think a lot of people had Port maybe inside the eight, maybe outside the eight, but to do what they've been able to do over the course of the season is, I think it's been undersold how impressive it's been. Because I think we're all expecting them to fall over at some point.
No,
but
well,
they haven't yet.
They haven't, and they won't for the home and away season. You're right, they'll finish on top. Because they have a very, very nice finish. They've got Essendon and Collingwood on the way home, so they'll finish on top. Essendon are rubbish, and the Magpies are struggling, so they'll be right.
So, they could be the Brisbane of last year, who got on top of the ladder, and then they got in the top two. They had their home final, and they lost consecutive finals. They might be that team, but they might be a bit more than that. And I think with the return of form of Ollie Wines and Tom Rockliffe in the midfield just gives them that harder edge and a bit more depth, and they've got that experience. I think now they're starting to be a genuine contender, Rama.
Well, what you say, Whitey, before we get to Rama, is that they'll get those home finals. In his hub life, where there was concern about whether or not they will get those home finals, which puts them in a really good spot, Rama. And Travis Boak is sort of almost Lockie Neal sort of territory for Brownlow.
Yeah, he's been a star this year. He's in career best form, which is unbelievable to say, because he's had an unbelievable career, Travis Boak. But the one thing, Jim, I think Port Adelaide might be just a touch concerned about is that bigger key defender. You know, to play on Tom Hawkins, to play on Tom Lynch, to play on Josh Kennedy, West Coast, if they play West Coast in the final. That's the one area I think that Ken will still be thinking about. How do we work around this?
Yeah, and that is my big concern, the key defender, but also the reliance still be on the big Chaz. If you're in opposition, going into final, you don't want to get beaten by what you know. So if I'm playing against Port Adelaide, I'm just sinking, a player back in front of the Chaz. I'm just like stopping him, limiting him, because that if you tighten a big final and you've got to dump it long, it's to Charlie. Whereas, like, just with their system, I'm still a little bit concerned about that big moment, big game sort of stuff, the reliance on the big Chaz. And you mentioned Geelong. Brisbane's got a game extra than Geelong, and they sit in third, but they're third on percentage. It could quite end up Port Adelaide, as you mentioned, half fantastic year, home final, and you run into Geelong, your first final, who played the Adelaide Oval brilliantly well.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah. But I was just thinking that, Jimmy, when we were talking about how good Port Adelaide has been this year and the reward of finishing up the top, there is an argument to suggest that the best two teams in the competition are actually going to finish third and fourth at the end of the home and away season.
Yep. With the tiggies there.
Maybe Richmond even fifth. Richmond may well finish fifth, even though West Coast lost last night.
No, West Coast are done.
Aren't they? They can't finish top four, can they?
Yeah,
Secured in the Kangaroos. Next week's a big one for them, Secured. And they've got the Kangaroos.
Yeah, someone vomits on themselves on the way home, as you say.
There'll be some vomiting somewhere, Jim.
Richmond have got Geelong half, so that's the thing for the Tigers.
How good's that going to be Friday night, just by the way?
Hey, just talking about Friday night, it was a costly night for Brisbane on Friday night with Harris Andrews.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And that's a big hammy. That's a six-weeker, unfortunately. So we're talking second week of the finals. So who comes in for Harris Andrews? Darcy Gardner already plays as an undersized key defender. I think they've got Jack Payne as another key defender they've used this year, but he's been a constant, Harris Andrews, now for a number of years at the Lions. That's a big loss.
They would have liked, why am I losing his name, the former Bulldog. Big muscles.
Marcus Adams.
Big muscles, you remember Marcus Adams. He's got the biggest biceps in the business, Marcus Adams. You would have liked him up and running, and that was probably one of the reasons why they got him up there. But, yeah, so they've got injury worries. Obviously, Port Adelaide, I'm still a little bit concerned with, obviously, key back, key forward sort of stuff. West Coast still haven't shown us that they like playing anywhere apart from home this year.
Yeah, spot on.
And Geelong is injury-free, and you mentioned Richmond. And also West Coast, Luke Shuey's got some hammies going on. Both hammies he's got strains in.
Awareness.
It's a tough thing to do both at once. Awareness. And Richmond, look, they've been rock solid, but they've got injuries as well, like Grimes and other key players to their personnel.
Yeah, but what I like about the Tigers is they've got the experience, they've got the know-how. And that leads to great belief. And when you've done it, Jim, as you well know, and Rami, you too, when you've done it and you know you can, that makes a massive difference psychologically when going into a campaign where there's other really good challenges around you.
And the other thing Richmond's got half is that they play the conditions very well. Their game style is conducive to the slippery, dewy, humid conditions.
And
ground on the ball, ball on the ground, that sort of thing.
Obviously, with what happened with the Richmond players late last week, everyone's now talking about Richmond culturally and this, that and the other. You watch Damien Hardwick whip his team into a frenzy about the us versus them. This will refocus them now. You know, they've still got two games remaining before the final series. He's ready to go. Yeah, they'll be ready to go, Richmond, now.
Let's talk about that after the break, Rammer. I want to talk about that a bit more and find out what you guys think about what that might mean and whether or not it's been handled appropriately as well. Of course, there's a game tonight too, Monday Night Football. How good's Monday Night Footy? We love that sort of stuff. It's Melbourne and Fremantle. Interesting to see what the D's can do, so I'll touch on that as well with Jimmy on the Monday Footy Review on The Breakfast Club. Nice to have you with us, 9 to 8. Jimmy Bartel, a part of the team on a Monday, is the Monday Footy Review Specialist. Monday Night Football with Melbourne and the D's a little bit later on this evening. Melbourne, 7 changes, if you don't mind. Before we get to the Richmond conversation, a bit of feedback from Nick Kyrgios. If you've just woken up this morning, good luck to you, by the way. It's looking like it's going to be a nice day in Melbourne town. 23 degrees or so, which is unusual. But Novak Djokovic has been defaulted out of the US Open for striking a ball into the neck of a Lions person, a Lions woman, in frustration after being broken, his serve being broken. So he was defaulted immediately and he's out. Number one seed, the world number one, will not win his fourth US Open. And Nick Kyrgios, funnily enough, has engaged in the conversation in the aftermath. On Twitter, our man Nicholas has said, "Swap me for Joker's incident. Accidentally hitting the ball kid in the throat." Well, it was a Lions person and it's a woman. "How many years would I be banned for?" He's got a poll running. 5, 10 or 20. I think Nick's going to enjoy this moment for a little while. He's got an official Twitter poll going on what would happen to him if he was in the same situation.
Well, Nick's kind of been vindicated with some of the things he said about Novak over the last few weeks. It's best for Nick just to let it all play out with him not needing to say anything, really.
Oh, no, he's been having a great time watching this.
The worst thing that Novak did was get in the getaway car and leave the scene. He should have faced the music in the press conference. That's just made it a hell of a lot worse for him.
This is Novak. He's the height of arrogance.
I'll tell you what, COVID is actually... There's no positive out of COVID, but it's actually been good for Nick Kyrgios' career. He's come across as the voice of reason, almost the people's tennis player. Yep. Not only has he's taken... Well, he's brave enough. We know Kyrgios doesn't care. But he's brave enough to take rips at, you know, the untouchables, you know, Djokovic. He's put bull-headed tennis players, arrogant ones, in their place for partying up when there's COVID going on and just spreading it.
Yep.
He's not afraid to mix it with them. And I think, and it'd be tougher for people in Australia, but I think around the world they're going, hey, we don't mind this guy. He's a little bit loose cannon. He's got a bit of the McEnroes about him. I think he's starting to warm to a lot of people, I guess, during COVID.
Yeah, no doubt. Jim, fair or unfair? No, spot on.
Yep.
Absolutely spot on. I would think, well, certainly I'm warming, and that's been difficult for me to do.
That's
Nicholas.
You're thawing. You're not warming, you're thawing.
Yeah. Well, I'm not on. Trust me, I'm not on. I'm not emotionally invested, but I'm more on the wavelength.
Well, you're exuding a warm confidence with that beautiful peach shirt on a Monday, so...
It is peach. I wore it today and last night for dinner because Abby bought me a peach T-shirt, which she showed me as part of my Father's Day present. It didn't arrive on time, so I said, I'll wear this for you just to give you the sensation of me looking awesome in peach. Anyway, we digress.
was it a reminder that you'd already had one similar and that you should go on a different colour?
Oh, no, it's not a polo. It's not nice, polo. This is the polo.
And you're rubbing it in.
I don't know if Jim was giving you a compliment too, by the way.
He was, Ramo. He did. Let's talk Richmond. Let's talk Tigers. The Sydney Stack, Callum Coleman-Jones situation when they've gone the double-fisted Souvlaki, Jim, which was unusual in itself. They must have been hungry.
Yeah.
They've been sent home for 10 weeks, suspended for 10 weeks, sent home, and the club's been fined $75,000 on top of the $25,000 suspended, so that's $100,000. Is that the right outcome? Ram, I'm throwing this one to you first as a player manager. Is that being dealt with appropriately, or are they harshly treated or lightly treated?
Well, I think it's the maximum penalty they can get from a suspension point of view. Look, they've made a mistake. It's a severe error. They've been dealt with, I think, appropriately from that point of view. It's a really, really tricky one for them because they're still young players, and I know that's going to sound like an excuse, but they've made a really, really poor error in judgment. They've put the football club at risk. They've put the AFL competition at risk. I think if you read their apologies both on the weekend, they've both got a huge amount of remorse about what they did, but the reality is they're going to have to live with it, Jim. They're going to have to live with that now. They're going to have to earn the respect back of their teammates, which takes a lot of time in these instances. When you make an error in judgment as bad as that one, it takes a lot of time to win the respect back of your teammates first and foremost, then, you know, the club in itself.
Yep, and agree with all that. I think the penalty was about right, half. I think it satisfied everyone, and what the penalty wasn't there to satisfy the players. It had to satisfy the league, the Queensland state government, the broader football community, and also like a community aspect, because there's people who are doing it really tough, and there's people who can't see family members and things like that. And
absolutely.
So it had to satisfy that, and it wasn't a penalty that, you know, let's satisfy the players and get it right. So I think they got it right there. You did touch on it, Rammer. Look, they're going to have to earn their trust back from people, but what it is, it just shows at that age that you can be tone deaf, and that's what it was. It was 100% tone deaf, because not only does the fine come off the Richmond Football Club out of their football department, the biggest struggle at the moment, this is just from a football point of view, not broader community, the biggest battle footy clubs have got at the moment is day and night they are working on how do they cut 33% out of their football cap spend. And that the only way you can do that is cutting people's jobs.
Yeah.
And they're going, well, how can we still keep people on and offer them less? And now you're minus $100,000. Like, every single cent that you need, because that's someone's wage, that's their livelihood, that's, you know, also a competitiveness factor to keep up with other clubs. It was just, I don't know how, and especially with what Richmond already went through with the Brooke Cotchin situation, which would have overemphasised on that club, we have to be above and beyond diligent in everything we do. So at what point of the night would you have gone, yeah, what? Probably we might be in a bit of trouble here. We're still out. We're at a strip club. We're then going to stay till 3:40 in the morning. Like, I'm not sure, and as you know, older people always used to say to us when we were teenagers, nothing good happens after 1 o'clock. You know, that sort of situation going on. But, look, they've done it. You know, they're going to cop a lot of heap on of what they've done. They've got to face it. So, but it just reflects as being tone deaf. And on a lighter note, half, I'm not sure how they could be up for 2 kebabs each, because the buffets are massive when you stay in hotel quarantine. So the double fish 2 kebabs, oh my goodness.
There's only ever been one
hungry
incident.
Boys.
One incident of double in my time was my brother. He was actually, he went out with my wife. They went into a music show and they came home and she told me the story of the two silver Lukey. It's folklore in our family that he went the back-to-back silvers, and it's never been done before or since.
I don't get, just get double meat. Don't get the extra bread in there.
You got to put the chips in there with the chicken salt all over the chips, yeah, as well. Put them in the suva. Oh.
Yeah. Don't double bread it. Imagine the bloat.
So does it affect the Tigers going forward?
The double suvas.
The double suva. Oh, that will affect. It'll revisit those boys for weeks. The double suva.
My opinion on that half, and I said it before the break, is it could have a galvanising effect on the football club. As well, so I know how Damien Hardwick would have been unbelievably disappointed. He would have challenged the team on the Friday about this. It would have been another stark reminder to pull their heads in. They've got 2 weeks of the home and away season remaining, then a final series. They've got players coming back. They've got real experience coming back into their team. He'll play on the us against them mentality now. He'll say they're all talking about us. They all think we're spoiled, entitled footballers at the moment. Let's go and show them.
Yep. Of this mess, Krazy wants to know why my brother was going out with my wife. No, it's just an evening. Just an evening. That, it was my wife's cousin's band. He wanted to go and watch, so they went together. I was working.
It's a good point, Krazy. It's a very good point.
Smart play from Daniel. Don't want to go to that sort of rubbish, so you can go. Yeah. No worries.
No, I was working. Send the brother I would have gone.
Just on that, Rammer. There's a lot that has happened to Richmond.
You
think of the character assassination of Tom Lynch. There's the putting hands and fingers where you probably shouldn't going on. There's been obviously the Cotchin situation. There's been this latest one. I think there's a couple of others as well. It is remarkable the team that could do no wrong both on and off the field over the last few years finds itself in the position it does. But it might be that hook that Damien's looking for to get them up for a potential third premiership.
You can't get worse than this, though. I think this is almost like this is the top of the mountain in how bad a situation that they now find themselves in as a group. So, Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I'll tell you one person who's breathing a big, big sigh of relief, and it's the old hold my beer, I'll one up just to let you off the hook, is Mark Evans from the Gold Coast, the CEO, who is doing cross-border car swaps. That just sort of got slid down the batting order nicely. You just got moved into the number 6 batting slot. I can even see your face, Rammer, going, what's going on here? And so, if you're unaware,
that was remarkable.
The Gold Coast CEO just driving Queensland plated cars down to New South Wales for people to come back over the border. Just sort of got pushed down the batting order because Mr. Coleman Jones and Mr. Stack wanted a couple of lamb suvas. Were they gone lamb?
Combo.
Yeah, probably lamb.
Always go the combo.
Combo mix.
Gotta go chicken.
You want to halve the risk of food poisoning by getting two different animals.
Correct. Get that. Correct. Very important, Jim. Now, before I let you go, Jim, who wins tonight? Melbourne and Freo.
Freo.
Oh, go Deez. Okay.
I actually like what Freo are doing. Freo is going to be one of those sides where, and we spoke about Brisbane earlier, when Brisbane had the 5-game winning season, we went, that's been actually an okay year. We've seen a lot. I think Freo are going to be a good side probably in about 18 months, you know, yep, towards the back end of next year. They've got some good young talent. I like the way Mr. Longmuir is trying to play these guys. And Caleb Sarong, I think, is it a cup? Is it a trophy? Is it a medal you get for the Rising Star? What? It's a medal?
Trophy.
It's a trophy. I think he...
Well, you get both.
Yeah.
You get both.
He's got his hand on the treadle of the Rising Star at the moment. I think he's the front runner at the moment, Caleb Sarong.
Righto, Fremantle for you. Whitey Rammer, who wins?
I'm with Freo. Off Melbourne.
Is it Gabe Cairns?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't think Melbourne. Yeah, it is. I don't think Melbourne's going to be able to score.
Surely Melbourne saw the way Essendon performed with their season on the line, and they take note of that, and they go, if we perform like that, we'll get absolutely hammered. Yeah. So,
it's Melbourne.
I'm picking Melbourne's outs aren't good.
Melbourne's outs aren't good.
No. Brayshaw, Spargo, Harms, Jones, Brown, Wagner, McDonald, Oscar are out. Vandenberg, Pruce, Hunt, Pickett, Hibbard, Baker and Bedford come in. I'm tipping Freo as well on the back of it.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, boy. All right, Jim. Nice to have you as always on a Monday morning. We appreciate your company. Look forward to doing it again very soon.
Don't spill the silver on that beautiful peach shirt of yours there, Huff.
No, I would never do that. I'll get the big boss hog napkin down the front. Don't you worry about that. Great stuff for Jimmy Bartel with us, our Monday footy review specialist. We'll get to the news.